Hi, it's Reina. I'm a TV chef, transcendental punk musician, neurobiologist, and radical self-love coach. And this is Creative Relationships. Creative Relationships is like On Being, but on acid and naked, covered in glitter in the jungle. This show is who the fuck knows what, but it's always insightful, deep, fresh, weird, fun, and exactly what the doctor didn't order. If your heart's beating but your soul's flatlining, grab your headphones, lace your sneakers up, and take a walk on the wild side of life. I'll see you inside.
It's all good. You're here now. I was wondering if this was part of like you being trapped in your basement without electricity and internet. And I was like, oh my God, are they still in the bunkers?
No,
it's and literally. Then I had a whole movie that played out in my head. I was like, oh my gosh.
No, I was literally sitting here being like, oh, I was watching Hannah Gadsby on my Instagram. And then I looked up and I'm going, spinning wheel of death. Oh, that's why we're not starting. Damn it.
Hi.
Hi.
Great. I fucking love your tie collection, dude.
Thank you.
So good.
Do you have
like hanging organizers for the ties? Please say yes. This makes my heart flutter.
Yes, it's like a hanging thing with little holes that you can hang them on. And so there's like a row of like four or five. And so then you can like, yeah, so you have these little spaces you can pull them out of and put them right back in. So I can just see the whole thing. And it's one hanger.
I love it. I love it. I don't care to own a lot of things because it's a lot of mental work for me to. I'm not great at maintenance. I'm great at a lot of things. I'm great at maintaining few things.
Yeah.
My wallet, I noticed, is I think at this point 14 or 15 years old.
Wow.
An Astro Boy holographic red wallet. These earrings are at least 9 years old. I've been wearing them not continuously. I take them off at night, but I wear them every day. That's all I wear.
I mean, I'm with you. I don't buy the ties. My mother-in-law does. So the tie collection keeps growing.
Are you that person that is like, oh, this is someone who's easy. I know what to get for this person. And it's going to be some kind of funky tie.
Seems to be with my mother-in-law. Yeah.
Okay.
It's sort of her go-to. It's button downs. She probably got me this button down actually. Yeah. I have the best mother-in-law on the planet. My mother, not so much with the ties and the clothes, but my mother-in-law. Yeah.
Well, you rock a great style.
Thank you.
I only have stylish people on the show. Welcome everyone. This is Creative Relationships, et cetera, et cetera. This is Dr. Erin Baker. He's a motherfucking just rock star of all kinds. I'm like spitting all over from excitement.
Can you see what this says? Can you see what
I am a divine fucking badass. Who made that? What is that? Is that a rock dildo?
It kind of looks like one. Yeah. I was part of a program last year that was, it started out being called the Divine Feminine Leadership Academy. And then turned into the Divine Human Leadership Academy. And we got swag. So this was, I'm a divine fucking badass, works for me. The only sad thing is I'm like, it's starting to fade. So I have to start hand washing it instead of putting it in the dishwasher. Cause badassery is not allowed to fade.
Yeah, no, you could paint over that. I have paint pens that work on ceramics. You could get a paint pen and just redo the art yourself, like handmade.
Yeah, fair enough.
I am so happy you're here. You had a birthday recently. You and I have been following each other's paths inadvertently / no coincidence for some time now.
5 years.
We keep landing up in the same spaces.
Yeah.
Like over and over and over again.
Over and over and over again.
We met at Forefront.
2017. October 2017.
In October 2017. It is now 2022.
Sure is.
So how'd you get there? Anyway, so that was a business conference.
Yeah.
Ramit Sethi's thing. And then, yeah.
It was accidental. Because, so I don't remember what year it was, 2014 maybe. My best friend turned me on to Ramit's stuff. She said, you know, there's a book called I Will Teach You to Be Rich. And I went, that sounds cheesy, but okay. And then I read it and went, oh, that's really interesting. And then learned he started in San Francisco and I was living in San Francisco at the time. And there were actual other Ramit people in the area. So I met a handful of those people. Mm-hmm. And I was really 2014, 2015 is when I went, oh, I wonder if I want to be an entrepreneur someday. I just started a job at Facebook, but back of my mind. So when the first Forefront came around in 2016, something just told me to get on a plane. I didn't know anybody going. There was one person from San Francisco who I found out was on my flight and became a good friend of mine. But yeah, something just said, go to this conference. And I went, I don't know why. It's 500 strangers. It's probably going to be mostly entrepreneurial. I work at Facebook. And what I said is, I'm going to play with the idea of entrepreneurship. I was on the cusp of managing a team at Facebook and went, what? I want to see what path I find. And it was, I have this concept called magic beans. I have all these, you know, jelly beans on my desk. I consider that event a magic bean that unfolded the rest of my life.
I love it. I love it. I think of them as like psychedelic nuggets. Like for me, yeah. I think it's psychedelic. So it's the same, yeah. Like one little seed of a thing and it's got a whole plant inside, yeah. And the plant has got more seeds inside, et cetera, et cetera. Et cetera.
Right. And I, you know, I talk to people about, you know, planting a garden is boring because you put a zucchini seed in and you know, you're going to get a zucchini in probably around 6 to 8 weeks, but like magic beans, you don't know what you're planting. You have no idea when they're going to sprout, if they're going to sprout, and they feel like fucking magic. And what I love about the idea is go do the things that feel like magic now.
Yes.
Right? Bring you joy in the moment.
Yes.
And know that some of those things are going to bring you magic for years to come. And that's, so that first Forefront, the last night we were all going out to dinner and I sat down, about to get up after like 2.5 hours of socializing, and a woman sat down who ended up being my first coach a year later. I thought coaching was bullshit at the time. And I was like, this person seems nice, but I'm not going to hire her. And then the year later, the day I left Facebook, she put out this free thing on Facebook and I went, oh, okay, interesting. And she became my first coach, which then unfolded a whole bunch of different things for me, including my business, but also some personal stuff. And then the next year at Forefront, I met you, but I also met two of my closest friends in the elevator. And we've been meeting every week for 5 years now.
That's amazing.
Right? Like I got my best friend to come with me. And now, yeah, we have these two close friends.
I love the idea of kind of following the magic in the now. And then the later is actually, I mean, there's a lot of trust that goes into that. The trust is to be in the moment and the detachment from the outcome. Yeah. It is crucial. Everything that's happened to me in my life, I've trained for nothing formally.
Yeah.
All the things I'm best at right now have been from following the intuition in the moment. Like you said, the voice that said, get on the plane, that voice, right? Whatever it sounds like or feels like in the body or sounds like in the head, we all have it.
Mm-hmm.
We are often deaf to it or blind to it or actively suppressing it because there's some script that we think we have to follow or a thing.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying we don't commit to things, right?
Sure.
But to me, the voice is like the voice of commitment anyways. It's like, it's a magical voice. It just tells me, it tells me things.
Right.
Speaking of which, can we talk about internal family systems? Speaking of voices in the head.
Magical things.
Magical things. This was a big surprise because Dr. B and I are both IFS nerds. And how did we discover this? I don't even know. It doesn't even matter. I forget. But you're in the midst of, are you in the middle of level one training right now?
I am.
Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Nerds. We're such nerds.
Such nerds. it's phenomenal. So I discovered IFS probably around this time last year. And it was like my whole way of seeing the world was put into a book. I could not believe what I was reading. I have, you know, for a decade now identified as non-binary in my gender. So I'm holding multiple genders to be true at the same time. So when there's this idea of we're holding multiples of anything, I'm like, yeah, totally. Right. I've seen it that way for a whole long time. And then I had been working with a coach for about 2.5 years who had been saying this. She's not an IFS person, but she kept saying, oh, let's welcome all the whatever's coming up. Let's welcome it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when IFS was like, all parts of you are welcome. And then starting to understand, oh my gosh, this is the like holy grail for me in so many ways for my own personal healing. But then looking at, oh, wow, this is why we can't do collective healing, because we are not welcoming all of ourselves. So we're not welcoming all of everybody else. Right. So I just got super into it, and then immediately went to the IFS Institute, found the coaching course.
Which was last summer. Were we in that together?
No, we weren't.
No, we weren't. No. We figured that out. So they did it in a couple of,
Yeah, I did it asynchronously. So there was an older version that came out like 2 months before the summer course.
Right. Right. Right.
But I took that course, and then I'm going, this is, I just knew, like a voice said, this is your path. This is the coaching methodology. And I was sitting in rooms of coaches that were well-intentioned, but coaching from a very like, you know, unintentionally shaming way of getting people to into action, and looking at it from a very heterosexual, white, privileged, cisgender perspective. And I'm going, oh my gosh, no, this is this new thing. This is what I want to be doing. And then my heart sank when I realized that I was in a lottery of, I've heard up to 11,000 people in this lottery.
It's like 12,000 some people. I don't know. It's a gigantic wait list of people who are waiting to be trained in internal family systems, which has been around for like 20 years, but it's seen a resurgence. I think, I don't know if it's a COVID thing or what, why it's suddenly so hot.
I think some of that also, you know, Alanis Morissette wrote the preface to No Bad Parts. I think Dick has
JDN
been
online. Is in it.
JVN's talked about it. Gabby Bernstein, I think, has talked about it in some of her work. And I think Dick has been on one of the bro-y podcasts. I don't know if it's Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss, but he's been on one of, he shared internal family systems with sort of wider populations. Uh-huh. So yeah, it's getting more popular. So yeah, I got lucky in the lottery. And I'm so happy I did. It's just being in a, first of all, just being in a room of other humans after COVID, mind blowing, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, we need bodies. We need people. Like, Zoom is not cutting it. So to be like, my training is physically like in person, which was amazing. And then just to be around other people who are coming from a place of deep compassion and kindness and love and working on all of the parts of themselves, and just being able to speak from that space, like, you know, oh, I have a part of me that's feeling really incompetent right now. Like, just, it's so different than I feel incompetent, right? Like energetically.
It's much more spacious. You know, there's room for your inner critic. There's room for your wounded inner child. There's room for girl parts and boy parts and gay parts and trans parts. There's parts, you know, there's room for hurt parts and angry parts and fucking asshole parts. All the parts. My rage dragon. Where is my rage dragon? This came out of internal family systems before I knew it was internal family systems. This lived inside me and destroyed lots of my life. And now this is a fiery, wonderful, like creative rage part that I have an amazing relationship with.
Yeah.
We didn't have to remove the anger.
No.
We did not.
No, we welcome it. We transform it.
We transform it.
Right.
And it got a different job that it loves its job much better now. It is like an artist's job.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a rock star job. That thing has like a much better job than like destroy everyone you love and yourself in the process. We're going to burn everything down.
Yeah.
And now it lights people on fire, like in the best possible way. It wakes people up and warms them and hugs them with words and music and sound and love. And I'm like, Jesus, the thing that I was trying to like kill inside me, that almost killed me, has this incredible power, transformational power that serves the collective. I get to do that instead of like cutting off a limb, you know?
Right. Well, and you know, that's just one part. Think of all the parts, right? All the parts we're doing that with. And you know, my wife had this awesome metaphor a while back about, you know, trying to hold our parts down is like trying to keep a kickboard underwater in the pool.
It's exhausting. Right?
It's exhausting. And eventually, if you let go of any grip of it, it pops you right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, bring it up to the surface. Like, let's bring it up to the surface. Let's let's splash around with it, right? Let's the kickboard can have a different role.
And it can be life-saving, right? Like a kickboard can float.
Yes.
You're pushing against the life-saving force. I have so much more energy now.
Yeah.
Presence and availability to be there for others in a way that I could not even be there for myself because it was so. I love the kickboard analogy. Your wife is a genius in so many levels, by the way.
Yes.
Say hi.
I will.
And I imagine, I'm imagining, but for you, because your journey has been so very specific around gender and identity and IFS and entrepreneurship and like change of all kinds, like radical, deep change, confronting oneself with like, there are no scripts for this. There might be a lot of shame around this. I don't even know where that lives and what it feels like. And it's big and scary and I don't know what to do with it. To here you are sitting here in your present form, which it continues evolving and morphing.
Yeah.
What have been your favorite helper parts along your journey? And what have been some of the most challenging ones?
That's a great question. So here's an interesting discovery, which is that I have some parts that look like they are self-energy. So self-energy being, you know, calm, curious, creative, clear, confident, courageous, connected, and compassionate, right?
You're the first person who's done that all 8 in a row. Look at you, A student. I can't do them.
I have them coupled together. Calm and clear, curious and creative, because those are kind of combined in my head. Courageous and confident are kind of in my head, and compassionate and connected. So like, I just have the in those twos. So it turns out I have a part that looks like self, but it's not. It's a curious part. And it's both detrimental and not detrimental, right? So it comes in when I don't actually want to do the deep work, and it's like pretending to be curious. But it's actually in most of the work I do, it shows up as genuine curiosity. It's not necessarily self-energy, but it's, I'm curious about the world. I'm learning, I'm experimenting. What happens if I do this? What happens if I do that? It's a curiosity about who I am and what lights me up. And it could be sometimes self-energy, but I think mostly it's just a very, very curious part, an intellectually curious part of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a really big helper for me. One that I've spent a lot of time with is, I don't think it's a perfectionist part, but I've figured out recently that I have a nervous system freeze when it comes to social media. And I've spent the last 3 years really working on like social media visibility and presence. I don't need it for my business, but I want it. But I have a nervous system freeze, and I haven't quite come to an understanding of what all parts are being protected yet, but it's just a cloudiness that I freeze and I can't think of what to say. And so that's been a really fun discovery for me to be playing with and understanding what's going on.
Is there a specific sub medium, like video or pictures, or like, is it a, like a like a body self being seen or voice being heard? Or like, I'm just curious, like what
it's about, it's about whatever I'm saying. What am I saying today? My body, I go blank. Which is funny because I have a shit ton to say, and I'm currently recording a book. And I've already recorded in just a month and a half, 50,000, probably more than 50,000 words. Like, I have a shit ton to say. So it's just a very interesting way I'm understanding my nervous system. I will say my greatest discovery with IFS, and I think you'll appreciate this because of the course that we're taking right now. So before I found Simone and Joyful Marketing, I was all about joy. And something I have discovered is joy at its core is being in self-energy. And joy is operating from self-leadership and knowing all of your parts. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest discovery has been the more I just hang out with my parts, for better or for worse, the more joy I experience. And the more alignment I experience in all of the things I do, whether it's my business, my personal life. I think that I see a lot of stuff about joy out there right now. There's a misunderstanding that joy is about beauty and delight and fun. Yes. Mm-hmm. And joy is about a deep connection to self.
Yes.
And understanding all of your parts. And so I talk a lot about joyful business. And I think Simone and I have very similar philosophies as she talks about things. Because I think joy is all about you. I had this whole message for a long time about, you know, authenticity and being you. And turns out that's joy.
I've struggled with the idea of like authenticity and being oneself, because in the moment you are being the you that you know, right? So, because under the surface of awareness, there's a lot happening that we're just not conscious of. So I remember back in the day thinking, this is me. This is real. Right. This is, I'm being me. Like, so a lot of the kind of the coaching world language of like, be yourself and just whatever. I don't know. There's some of it is a kind of pithy language. It had then, you know, people don't go deeper inside what that means. But that was very much like a block for me because I couldn't access the meaning. I was like, I don't know what this means. What else is there? I am this person. I am, you know, a slave to my emotions. This is who I am. Yeah. And you're telling me to not be myself by controlling my rage or keeping my feelings down, which is how I understood it, which is not the case at all.
Right.
So I love this idea, right? Joy similar to compassion, which to me is just a very, like a lot of people, I had this great interaction recently with a client around like the idea of compassion. A lot of the time sounds very like soft and pillow-like and expansive and like maternal and all hugging and all encompassing and so compassionate. Sometimes this is what compassion looks like a hard no is the most compassionate, kind, loving thing you can do for yourself and others around you. Mm-hmm. So we don't all have to be like, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is also will do his version of this in extreme compassion, right? Which is a joyful thing. The joyful no is like a great freaking thing. Powerful to say, this is where I draw the line. This is where I stop. This is where I stop bleeding out myself. So I'm not available for myself or my people.
Yeah. I think the misunderstanding of joy is that it's a 100% positive experience. One of the things I love about joy as an emotion is it's one that can be experienced with all the other emotions, right? It's really hard to be happy and sad at the same time, but you can be joyful and sorrowful, and you can have joy and pain, joy and anger. And so I try to really teach people around that piece of it, right? So some of the most joyful work I do is when I'm sitting with a client who's in tears. Mm-hmm. And is in pain, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I'm happy, but it's fucking joyful because it's coming. Joy to me is this deep embodied experience of like satisfaction and love and kindness and sometimes that's the pillow. Sometimes it's the fuck you. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's the most joyful thing I can do is say no, or the most joyful thing I can do is take a tiny act of courage or a big act of courage, right? Because mm-hmm. all joy is to me is being deeply rooted in here.
Yes. Yeah. It is a form of presence. Mm-hmm. Right? And without mm-hmm. also having to beat ourselves up about being some kind of perfectionist, always present. I'm always present.
I am not always present.
I check out a lot on purpose. Yes. Sometimes not on purpose. And I just, it's fun to watch it come and go. And I teach leadership presence. Like, this is my other job.
Yeah.
We teach people how to be present, and we teach them it's okay to like leave and come back. Like,
right.
You can have a hall pass and you can come back to class, honey. Like, it is okay mm-hmm. to not, because we're always looking, I mean, especially like my people, like people pleasers, codependence, self-worth, mm-hmm. low self-esteem, etc., intergenerational trauma, internalized misogyny. I could go on. Anyway, we are so good at finding problems with ourselves.
Right.
We're addicted to finding problems with ourselves. And to me, IFS is very liberating, that there's like the starting premise is that there is fundamentally nothing wrong with you.
Right.
And it's so freeing.
We need all of our parts. You need the checkout part, right?
Very handy for very boring meetings. Very handy for very dull conversations. Yes.
We need that. Yeah. We need that part. That doesn't mean that the part's always acting in our best interest, because it can get burdened or, mm-hmm. you know, come in and rescue when it doesn't need to. But yeah, we need those parts.
And when we're in a relationship with our parts, in right relationship with these parts, mm-hmm. then they know self is in charge.
Right.
There is trust within the system, and we can call upon, hey, checkout part, like, I am in the grocery line. This is not looking great for a while. So what shall we do? It's like, oh, I have an idea, right? Let's say, and then idea part, I have a very strong ideas part. It's like they have a conversation and they come up with like, whatever, look at this magazine, or like abandon cart and leave.
What
I would do, right? So there'll be like entire negotiations that now happen very quickly. It's like mm-hmm. almost split second. Mm-hmm. But breaking it, like slowing it down and kind of watching it happen. I had a conversation yesterday out loud in bed. Like, I do this a lot with my hands. I have puppet tendencies. So, mm-hmm. so I puppet my parts a lot. With a food, body, and drinking part that I've been like, there's probably a trio in there at least that need to have some conversations. You know, they've been wanting to talk for a while, and we have these conversations in kind of little ways. And now they're like, no, I think we need to really have a serious conversation. So I sat there in bed sobbing and having this, and then laughing, because this one is really funny. I look like a crazy person, just like a lot of IFS people are like,
yeah, I know.
Doing my own IFS work is pretty fucking nuts to watch. Mm-hmm. Walking around the house and talking. I don't know how it is for you. Do you work with someone? Do you have like a therapist or IFS?
I do. Okay. I have an IFS therapist. Yeah. And I do my own internal work too.
Yeah. I've been therapist less for a year now, but I'm good. I'm looking for someone, but not like hard and actively, like if they come along. The availability here with my insurance is kind of fucked up. So I don't know. It may happen. It may not. I love that this is a self-therapy model. So I don't feel like I'm drowning. I haven't had a depressive episode in almost year and a half, at least now.
Wow.
And I'm not in meds. I'm not saying that any of that is bad. I'm just attesting to the power of the model.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've had tremendous amounts of change. I've been sustaining myself in a new expensive apartment in like the most pricey part of town, just to be near my kid and her other parent, and all kinds of other changes. And that's what I love about this. There's like a lack of kind of hierarchical dependence on another authority to constantly be like fixing you and healing you and solving shit for you. So the internal trust that builds in this is tremendous.
Totally. I had just yesterday, my wife and I have a couple of therapists, and she was noting to me just the growth she's seen in me. And I said, yeah, I've been doing a shit ton of work. And I recognized, I said, I don't remember how I said it, but you know, I have a therapist who's great. I see her once a week though. And we may get into one part for a minute here and there, right? But like the majority of the work that my couple therapist is seeing is the stuff I'm doing for myself, with myself. The progress is not, I love my individual therapist, but it is not due to working with her. It is due to the model's ability for me to work with it every day. And I'm working with it every day with my clients too. And so, you know, there's sort of that like leaking of healing that when I'm working with somebody else and not their parts, it's.
So you're constantly doing your own parts work while you're in session.
Totally. Even if it's unconscious, right? My parts are hearing how I'm talking with, if I'm in self energy with my clients, my parts are hearing what self energy is saying to them and hearing it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's like having a room full of people. I never feel alone. I am never freaking lonely. I've never been lonely since I was a kid in that sense. Like I've loved being alone, and the longing I've felt in all the in hindsight messed up relationships. But I mean, even that, I don't, to judge them in hindsight doesn't feel actually very right to me. Like they just were what they were. All of that brought me here. Mm. All of those people have brought me here. Every single one of them has been part of the adventure. And I love every single one of them. Even the perpetrators. That sounds crazy. I don't want to be around them anymore. I'm done. But I can be thankful.
Sure.
And loving from a distance and not have to want to do any of that again.
Yep.
You know? And so having like all the parts in the room watching and participating in your sessions, do your clients get the model easy? Do you teach the model? Because I'm mixed. Like some people want to know, some people don't care. And I just, it's so intuitive.
Yeah. It's a mix. Yeah. It's a mix. So for the one-on-one clients that I work with, about half of them are interested to know what's happening and half don't care. But I'm also running right now a group program called the Self Leadership Academy, which is all about, it's an IFS, it's self leadership is a broader term, but it's IFS based. And so they really wanted to learn the model. So I did a retreat with them for 3 days where I did some teaching. And then even last week, we had a beautiful session where someone unburdened a really tender exile. And I afterwards sort of debriefed with the rest of the group about what just happened, what we were working with so that they understand for themselves, because the Self-Leadership Academy really wants to learn how to do this work for themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I do teach the model with them, but for the most part, it's intuitive enough that not everybody needs to do it. I'm doing IFS sessions as a one-off right now for a donation for Ukraine. And those folks have asked a little bit about the model because they're like, well, what are we about to do? But yeah, I think it's such an intuitive thing. The thing that I keep finding is some of the questions that seem a little weird, like how old is this part, right? Things that I think if I don't teach the model, they're going to be like, Garen, are you talking about? And I did that last week. And I asked the guy and he's like, wow, that's a question. And then he sat with it and he went, oh my God, this part's 10 years old.
They almost always respond. The questions are freaking great. I love a good power question. IFS is all about questions. It is a pure question model, which is great because I'm not a teaching kind of coach in the sense of like, here's a bunch of information I'm going to give to you that you have to do. Right. Yep. Here's a bunch of tasks and goals and info.
I don't do that either.
And then watch all this video and read all this stuff and then bye. So I love the questions. I know that how old is the part is always like.
Anytime I have a part that gets worried, right, that what we're doing is hokey. It's really funny at IFS training. Someone said, what do we do about the fact that, you know, we're doing, like, how do we tell people when we're doing something that feels hokey? And the IFS trainer was like, well, we are. It was just like, straight up, we are. And we believe in it. So anytime I have that part that's like, oh my gosh, this is the time when the client's going to think I'm a total weirdo or think I'm doing something too out there. every time I ask those questions comes back to me with, holy crap, there's an actual answer. And then they go, what the heck just happened? Right.
And we can work with all of the skeptical parts are also welcome, right?
Yes.
At one point, everybody thought the world was flat. And the idea that the world was round was very hokey.
Yes.
My friend just recently, who's like a PhD chemist, I think she is. I don't know. She's like somehow, like a super smart science person, said most of most scientific papers that are published are unreplicable. Like the results cannot be something more than 50, 60, 70%. I don't know, some high numbers. I don't know what the statistics were.
Yes.
But there's a lot of pressure to publish, right? So the science that we turn to, and especially in the West, we like revere the science with a capital S so much. Yep. All of it has come from hypothesis, from ideas, from creative kind of thinking, and some testing, and then all the other institutional pressures and the bureaucratic fucking compromises and all of that. Personal, like, you know, wishes to get ahead of the other, cutthroat internal politics and shit like that. And that's the stuff that gets published. And that's the stuff from which companies are built. Medicines get made. Psychiatry is you know, and therapy is built on. I've learned a lot about science like that. And I come from a science background. And the same with therapy. And I love therapy and I love science. Therapists also have compromised, you know, there's a lot of compromise within therapy. At least in the American US model of it, with insurance companies and big pharma and all of that. So nobody has no agenda.
Correct.
And this model is just as valid as any of the others.
It is.
And it works.
Yeah. And I come from a science background and a psychology background. I can't tell you something that I am aware of all the time is how many coaches out there are teaching science that's not replicable because it's what gets into the popular culture and then becomes like the coaching mantras. And so I've really strayed away, even as a science nerd who knows a lot of things, from teaching about human behavior because we actually just don't know shit. And it's much like what I love about IFS, right? It's no agenda. And I don't have to bring in science because I have a person right in front of me who I'm asking questions, and all that matters is their experience and what they decide to do with learning about their experience, right?
It is a relation. I love it's a relationship model. I'm deeply now just working in relationship with people. I don't have a program or anything. People come. It's like you get to be in relationship with me, and that is the healing, and that is the coaching. And that's where the discovery and the play is. And when there's no agenda, right, then that hokey part disappears. It's like it's experiential and it is done in relationship, right? So there's trust and exploration in the moment together.
And I'm just we're just asking questions. They don't have to answer them, right? Like if I go, well, how old is that part? And they're like, well, that's a weird question. It's just a question.
Just a question.
And I've really come to a place with my own coaching that's very similar to you. I find it, I can feel the tug on a regular basis back into the very like tactical doing, have a program with specific results, sell the specific results to people. And I get where that comes from in the marketing world. And the more I do this deeper work, the results come, right? I don't know the last time I've talked with some of my clients about the specific outcomes they want to create, but they are creating them, right?
Because the best way to meet your agenda is to drop it. This is written on my little washing machine.
and it really is. And, you know, they may come, I'll give an example without breaking confidentiality. You know, someone came to me last week who's a therapist building a practice, and we started off with something about uncertainty and billing, and then it went a completely different direction into a very tender childhood wound. And one of the things I love about IFS is they don't have to tell me what's happening internally. So I actually don't know what wound we were working with because she was doing all the work internally herself, but whatever it was, fucking changed her life.
Mm.
And I'm sure it'll take care of whatever she came to me about billing mm-hmm. and uncertainty. But if I had stayed at the billing and uncertainty level, we might have fixed it for the moment, how to get herself more comfortable with hiring someone to do her billing work, right? But instead, we went into this other thing, and I can guarantee we've just had a ripple effect through her system
mm-hmm.
that will change everything. And so
it's so good,
right? It's hard to sell mm-hmm. at times, because people are, well, what's the outcome? What's the results? And I'm like, mm-hmm. inner alignment, joy, whatever results you want to create, I can guarantee you. Yeah. I just can't tell you that we're going to work on those directly.
Yeah, this is interesting, because I've been thinking about, so I've been in different IFS training programs and stuff. So I have a few colleagues in different places, and many of them struggle with the marketing piece. Like, they're all yeah. either therapists or coaches or something.
Yeah.
And I'm a marketing nerd. I freaking love marketing. It's so fun. To me, it's just fun. It's like being an artist. It's creative.
Yeah.
That's all I see it as. So I really enjoy it. And it's been interesting to think about the marketing piece around IFS, and especially with Simone's idea of, she calls it the benevolent bait and switch. I don't know if I'm giving away yeah. stuff, but there's no secrets. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I've been sitting with that. I was like, wait, so do I have to invent an outcome just to get people in and then do the benevolent bait and switch? And like, the thing is, like, we're working on the inside parts. And I'm going to share this in the group later. And then I realized I'm going to do the benevolent bait and double switch, where all I'm doing is saying, I'm teaching self-love.
Mm.
You come for that. And the switch, the double switch, because I used to think nobody will come in just for that, right? They'll come for the money or the weight loss or the food, right? And I was like, what if I kink that thought? Because I love kinking thoughts, just flip it on its head and think about the same thing from a different point of view. And I said, well, what if I wanted, my whole life I've longed for love and connection above everything else, above money, above health, above all the other whatever normal things. I was like, so if I have longed for that, why might I think there's nobody else in the world who would long for that? I have this theory of like one other person. Whenever I'm stuck with a thought, I'm like, there's got to be one other person in the world who's having the same issue and who's overcome it. Like, that's one way. Or like, if I'm the one thinking it, there must be one other person thinking it. I'm here for that person, and that's it. That's my one person.
I love that, right? So, you know, the metaphor I've heard in the past is like, you know that they need broccoli, but you got to cover it in cheese, right? So the money, the health, the sex, whatever is like the cheese, but you know.
But I love broccoli.
But I love broccoli too. And I love that. I've had the same thought, right? So every time I feel myself getting pulled back into the normal marketing tactics about telling people about results and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I come back to, I wanted this. I needed this. I was a little blinded by the money piece. And so I can still talk to people who are a little blinded by the money piece, but still know deep down what they really want is, I'm using the word joy, because joy is such a deep, I didn't realize that's what I was seeking my whole life. And joy and self-love are very intertwined. But now I'm the same way. If I'm experiencing this, someone else is experiencing this. Right.
And it's valid.
And I don't have I talk about joyful business on Instagram, but if you look at my client base, I have no niche. I just have a whole bunch of people that are seeking joy and don't know that that's what they're seeking.
You are the niche, Dr.
I know. I'm the niche. I am very aware that I am the niche.
But the I've heard it called the niche.
in traditional marketing senses, people are like, who do you work with? And I'm like, people who are seeking joy and didn't know that's what they've been seeking all along. And they are in every walk of life.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. The demographic info does not make any sense to me
no,
at all.
No.
But there's there's like psychographic.
There's psychographics, but it's mostly, if it's somewhere along the lines of me and somewhere on my path, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some recognition, there's some mirroring, somewhere mm-hmm. along, they see themselves in you in some way, mm-hmm. just like my mm-hmm. people see themselves in me in some way, mm-hmm. even if they don't realize it. Right? Right. That's where the magnetism is. You don't have, it's yep. like love. That is what love is.
Right.
Which is why I'm thinking of all my client relationships as actually like love relationships. This is an intimate, it's a very intimate container. Oh,
one of the more, I mean, my coach for 2.5 years was the most intimate relationship of my life besides my wife.
It's so hot. Yeah. And you don't even have to take your clothes off. It's great.
And it's intimate and it's safe. And it's like, God, I mean, the way my clients have described it to me is I've never been in a place where I can show up as all of me.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I love that about IFS and I love that about coaching is I don't have to focus on how to get people from point A to B, because once they feel safe and seen for all of their mess, they'll figure out how to get themselves from point A mm-hmm. to point B.
And beyond, right? Because
yes, yeah. and well beyond, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, to me, people are like not understanding that we're not rearranging the chairs on the Titanic here. We are doing a full rewiring of mm-hmm. you and who you are. And IFS, I played with this tension for a long time between, you know, coaching being sort of like this fast, you know, life-changing thing and IFS, where sometimes we got to spend all, I mean, some parts, yes, they will spontaneously take mm-hmm. on new roles the minute you start talking to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are other parts that are so ingrained that it's going to take mm-hmm. 6 months of talking to them daily before they're mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm ready to loosen my grip.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've really spent a lot of time with, what if coaching is slow? What if these like a single insight will change your life? This moves faster than any therapy. It can.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what if we stop putting pressure on coaching being the quick fix, the quick band-aid,
mm-hmm.
the I'm going to exponentially charge your results, and slow down and say, you know what? No, we're actually going to do some of the real deeper work. And 5 years from now,
mm-hmm.
the work we've set the foundation for, you're going to look back and go, holy crap. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have people coming back to me. I was saying this to someone else, probably on this show in a different episode, but I have folks coming back a year plus after saying, you know, that thing we found out and the thing, the insight that yeah. we had together yeah. and
yeah,
it's starting to land now. And I'm seeing it in different aspects of my life and they're experimenting with that same yeah. insight in different other yeah. relationships or whatever. And it's coming to fruition, right?
Yeah.
So again, planting seeds, just to come yeah. full circle, right?
Yeah.
Planting the seeds requires being in the moment, to going deep,
yeah.
understanding that not all seeds germinate at the same time or in the same way or at all yeah. necessarily,
yeah.
and trusting the process. IFS is a process yeah. model, not a product model.
Yeah.
So I'm playful and I like parts of it to have like, I don't know if speed is the right word, but just like there's energy. Yeah. Like I bring, I'm a high energy person. So I bring like some yeah. high energy things. And yep. then we can solve our asses off. I spent 2.5 hours in the tub yesterday.
Yeah.
Just not sobbing. Just like, I was like, I'm just, you know, I have nothing, not watching, not listening to anything. I just sat there. It's both.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I have another metaphor in my head, which is, I think a lot of coaches are looking to create mountains through volcanic eruptions, you know, big, big spews of insights that then form a mountain fast. But most volcanic mountains don't grow that tall. Whereas the earthquake ones that do the like slow over time, that's when you get Everest. That's when you get the Rockies. Mm. That's when you get, and it takes a shit ton of time and you don't notice the change. And so what I tell my clients all the time is in process, it's not, maybe you'll feel a little jolt, but it won't feel like it. But at some point you'll look at yourself and go, oh my God, I'm a mountain. Because I can see back to 6 months ago when I wasn't this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to have some volcanic eruption insights. Mm-hmm. Those can be really exciting and help mm-hmm. feel like you're moving mm-hmm. forward. But I see so many people looking for that huge explosive change. But those mountains don't get very tall.
No. I have a whole sexual metaphor growing in my mind, but I'm just going to shut it. Thank you very much.
I mean, that was hilarious. And you think about the, you know, Everest is part of a whole range, right? Uh-huh. Or the Rockies, right? Uh-huh. You can have an entire range of mountains if you can do it slowly over time.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. The tiny shifts and the deep tectonic plate movement.
Both. And it's stuff you don't always feel.
Eruptions. Yeah.
And you don't, always feel it, right? I think that's the thing that some people are like, but I don't, is this working? I'm like, yeah.
Is it working? I wonder if someone's, is it going to work part? And in almost immediately, that was a part that had concerns in it. And it was like outcome driven. Like, am I going to, anyway, they had a body thing. And is my body going to change, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, we'll talk to that part. Is it okay that we go there and figure out why it needs this specific result or else it doesn't work? Like, what does it working even mean? And how did it come to that? Right. So we went there and there was just like this, So it was great. It was great. We can talk forever.
We can.
You are like my identical twin in so many ways. I'm deeply appreciative of your presence here today, but also in the world as you are, exactly as you are, doing all the amazing things that you do. Good luck with the book. We'll be in touch. I'll see you like online and probably of later today or something.
Yes, probably.
Thank you for being here and speaking to your joy, all your joyful parts.
Well, thank you for having me in all of my parts.
They're all welcome. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, if you're just starting to discover that you are a resentful, exhausted, overwhelmed people pleaser, you are welcome to my weirdo family. Go to my website, www.reynajhaveri.com. Yes, you will have to spell that, RaynaJhaveri.com, and get on my mailing list. I will see you in your inbox, and we're going to learn how to say yes to yourself and no to other people with a big, fat, open heart. I love you, and I'll talk to you soon. Today I speak with the multitudinous Dr. Erin Baker, fellow IFS nerd, about the new wave in personal coaching and inner transformation, collective healing, compassionate fuck yous, joy, going slow, and this amazing concept they call magic beans. Stick around and check it out.